Your FBS college football playoff is now set. To help break it down, Brian Fisher joins us, national college football writer at College Football Talk, also with Athlon as well. And he joins us. Brian, how you doing, man?
Hey, Brian.
Good to be on with you guys.
Hey, did the College Football Playoff Committee get it right?
Oh, yeah. I think this was maybe one of the easiest decisions that they've ever had to make. And even not just in terms of that top four, but, I mean, the group of five bid was kind of taken care of on the field. Everything was right there for everybody to see. And so there was no controversy this year, that's for sure.
Well, let's expand that to the New Year's Six. Do you feel like they got the New Year's Six matchups right?
I think so. I think if you wanted to maybe quibble a little bit with you know, maybe flipping Wisconsin and Penn State for the Rose Bowl, you could have, just because of that extra loss. But I think, you know, Wisconsin, with the top 25 wins that they had, certainly going to the conference championship, winning their division, probably earned them an easier nod, I guess, even though maybe Penn State's upside as a top 10 team might have been better for in some people's mind. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's just splitting hairs for something you know, relatively under the radar in terms of that Cotton Bowl bid. And obviously it's huge for Wisconsin to get to the Rose Bowl again. Fascinating matchup in that game. But I think overall, from top to bottom, you know, you really can't disagree with a lot of the decisions that the committee made, and for good reason, because it was all kind of perfectly, neatly wrapped up for them on conference championship weekend.
Well, Brian, not going to lie, there's a lot of people here in Utah that are a little disappointed and a little surprised with that performance on Friday against Oregon. Did you see anything like that coming from the Ducks?
You know, I think just because the matchup was pretty good for the Ducks. I think that was why I think coming into that game, I know Utah was obviously highly ranked and had everything in front of them in terms of the playoff. But when you looked at that Ducks, especially the lines that they had, you know, they matched up very well. And you saw that in full display on Friday. I mean, you know, when that offense is able to create some big plays and Justin Herbert has time to throw, you know, they're a dangerous team. That wasn't the case when they lost Arizona State until they kind of went to that two-minute drill towards the end. But in the same even, you know, against Auburn. But at the end of the day, just not the kind of performance we kind of expected out of the Utes, given how they were just kind of coming in, steamrolling opponents. Those minor gains that certainly on third down that usually they were getting and even turning into big plays at times just weren't there against the speed of that first and second level of that Oregon defense. And, you know, I mean, give credit to Mario Cristobal and his crew. Had a terrific game plan coming in, and those players went out and executed in Santa Clara.
Brian, I want to talk about the phenomena that is currently going on. And now we've had 24 opportunities to see some of the nation's best college football programs in this college football playoff, and only two of them have been out west. Now, 4 years of the six, you've got the Pac-12 being locked out. And so we're looking at all the teams representing basically being east of the Mississippi and down into the south, and only Oregon and Washington representing out of 24 opportunities to represent. Is football just that mediocre here in the west?
I think it's a combination of factors, and everybody wants to say that it's cyclical, and there is something to that a little bit. Obviously, you look at some of the powers in the conference, you know, being down the last couple of years. Certainly, USC not to the level that you would expect. That's a program that can compete with all the others in terms of having elite talent on the roster. I think for everybody else, you know, especially in the Pac-12, the stars just have to align perfectly. They did for Washington a couple of years ago, just in terms of the talent on that roster, the coaching, everything on their schedule. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, the Pac-12 certainly puts themselves in a more difficult position because of the nine conference games, the conference championship game. I mean, you look at Oregon, you know, if they didn't play Arizona State, if they played an FCS team, you know, that weekend, instead of a crossover game for their ninth conference game, you know, they might have been in the conversation for the playoff instead of Oklahoma. So, you know, everything does kind of have to work correctly for teams out west to end up getting a shot. But you know, at the end of the day, I think you can see, you know, Mario Cristobal building towards more consistency, especially on the on both lines. That's going to help Oregon get into that conversation more regularly. You know, I think we'll see what, you know, Utah and USC and others in the conference are able to do in terms of correcting some of the small things that have held them back the last couple of years. But, I think overall it's just, the Pac-12, it's a difficult league. Everybody knows each other so well, and that just makes life difficult for an elite team or even very good teams to kind of cross over that threshold and get up to being one of the great teams in the college football playoff.
Lane Kiffin going to make it at Ole Miss?
I don't know. I think it's an interesting case because obviously expectations around there are a lot higher than they are. Historically, it's not been a terrific job. Obviously, you look at David Cutcliffe, he did lead them, to double-digit wins. You got Houston Nutt with a couple Cotton Bowl appearances, but, they tend to cycle coaches out pretty quickly. I think Lane Kiffin certainly built for that SEC recruiting juggernaut and getting talent into Oxford. I think, certainly the ceiling for the Rebels a little bit higher, but I'm just kind of curious, when is, if he gets up into 8-9 win territory, which, he's certainly capable. He's a good coach. He's learned from past experiences. Obviously, we know he's going to upgrade the talent level on that roster. But, when 8 or 9 wins is not going to be good enough, is that going to push Lane Kiffin out the door? I think that's probably what's going to end up happening. He'll have some initial success early on, and then, as things kind of get stagnant there, it's typically a school that churns out coaches, and that probably will be no different for Lane Kiffin. As dynamic a figure as he is, as fun as it is to have him back in the SEC, that's just such a difficult job in the SEC West, competing not just against the Alabama and Auburns of the world, but you got to take into account Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher out there. You got to take into account others rebuilding. Obviously, you got some crossover games with the East in terms of Florida, Georgia out there. So just the meat grinder that is the SEC, certainly for those middle tier programs like Ole Miss, it's just so difficult to kind of break through and have sustained excellence that I think a lot of coaches are having. And that's something that Lane Kiffin is probably going to run out to as well.
Brian, can you make any sense of what Missouri just did with their $4 million coaching hire?
Yeah, I think the figure overall in terms of what they're paying him definitely got a lot of attention today. I think it's definitely they overpaid a little bit, but when you're back into a little bit of a corner with the coaching choices, the ADs lose a lot of leverage to the agents, and that's where figures like this end up surfacing. And I think at the end of the day, can Eli Drinkwitz kind of elevate that program to a more consistent 8 and 9, 10 wins team? I think absolutely, especially in the East, and especially with that talent base where you can go into Texas, where you can get people throughout the South and up there to Columbia. I think it's going to be raise the floor a little bit, for that program. But at the end of the day, it's still a risk. Obviously he's only been a head coach for 1 year, took over a stacked roster. We still don't really know what he's truly capable of as a head coach. But you talk with him, you talk with people that have coached with him. Certainly well respected, and you look at what he kind of left behind at NC State and how they kind of fell off the map after he left. There's at least some indicators there that Missouri has certainly taken a big chance, but one that could definitely pay off in the end with their coaching hire.
How about Florida State? Do you think they got the right guy?
Absolutely. I think this was, the easy A of the coaching cycle. When you talk about going in, not only hiring, but the kind of hot group of five name in Mike Norvell, but really a coach that gets it, understands how to build a program, understands how much effort you got to just put into recruiting on a daily basis. Obviously, brilliant offensive mind, knows how to call plays, get everybody excited on that side of the ball. But, I think depending on a couple of his staff moves, especially on defense coordinator, which are going to be hot, very key in terms of what he's going to build there going forward. But at the end of the day, I think just a home run for Florida State to get back on track. He's a guy that you meet him, you certainly understand why he's a head coach at a big-time place like Florida State, and I certainly expect big things. Maybe not initially, just because of the state of the roster there, but I think in terms of getting Florida State back to being competitive in the ACC, Mike Norvell can definitely do that.
Hey, Brian, outside of the four teams in the college football playoff and maybe the Rose Bowl, give us one or two bowls and matchups that you're really excited to see.
Well, I think you can start in Las Vegas with the Chris Peterson Bowl. And I know he hates the fact that he's going to have to face his former team. He hates the fact that that's going to be an overarching storyline in this game. But it's just a fun game. And you got some interesting options. I'm sure there's going to be trick plays galore in this one. You got Brian Harsin, who's done maybe one of the more underrated coaching jobs, especially out west, rotating three different quarterbacks in throughout the season, you know, starting a true freshman on the road in the first game and still going, you know, 12-1 undefeated in the Mountain West. You know, really a terrific job, especially considering that they lost Andy Avalos, the defensive coordinator, this offseason, and they ended up just being as good, if not better, on that side of the ball. So just that to me kind of sticks out in my mind. I like the lower tier bowls as well. You got, you know, Miami of Ohio, the MAC champions, against the Sun Belt runner-ups in Louisiana Lafayette. At the end of the day, so there's all those little mini kind of bowls in between that the major ones that I think for a college football fan you really can't get enough of, and that's going to be the case this offseason as well.
Well, hey Brian, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us, and look forward to catching up with you again here very soon.
Absolutely, anytime. Good to be on with you guys.
Good stuff from Brian Fisher. You can follow him on Twitter @BrianDFisher.